Welcome back to Muppets in Space, a Farscape rewatch podcast on the incomparable. Next up in our continuing rewatch, Season 2, Episode 9, Out of Their Minds, and Episode 10, My Three Crichtons. I'm your host, Eric Scott, and joining me as always is my fellow co-host, someone who doesn't drive me out of my mind, Jason Johnson.
Hang on a second. I'm Eric, right? You're Jason. Wait, are we out of our minds? Have we switched bodies?
I'll tell you what. I'll print us out some tags with our pictures on them, and that way we can clear this right up.
Okay, good, because that's more important. So I can see who you are, not see who you really are.
Yeah, because visual gags work really well in a podcast.
Yeah, and now we know that DRDs can print like an old dot matrix printer. So that's, you know, there you go.
Yeah, they're like little Polaroids that fly. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Self-propelled printers. Who knew?
I'm trying to come up with what the acronym DRD can stand for that has printing in it. I'm coming at a loss, so we probably should roll on.
Yeah, I'm usually good at like making up fake acronyms, but yeah, that direct
dot right right
dot,
right,
dot right,
something
writing device. I don't know, whatever. Fine, there we go. Okay, great.
You just capitalized the R instead of the W.
Yeah, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, 3 R. Yeah. Anyway,
that went off the rails quickly.
Yeah. On a better note, that at least our predictions last time were pretty spot on for what these two episodes were.
So either
we're great at guessing, or they were just so obvious episode titles that, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I think we kind of have figured out the naming mechanism here, and B, these were pretty easy. So,
yeah. Although, as we'll find out at the end of this episode for next time, not a clue, because no help whatsoever. But hey, that's the fun. All right. So, yeah, I guess spoiler alert, we did kind of enjoy these episodes as we're talking offline here or off recording. So it looks like Farscape's kind of hitting their season two writer's groove so far.
Yeah, you can tell these were probably written in order and made sense and, you know, weren't rushed too much. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, when you have time to, you know, write a story and not be rushed, you write good stories. Who knew?
Surprise.
All right, so let's get into it. Season 2, Episode 9, as my cats chase each other around the room that I'm standing in. If you hear scraping and scuffling, that's why. Season
cats
2...
Cats out of the bag.
That's right. Both cats out of the bag. Season 2, Episode 9, Out of Their Minds. Moya has been targeted by an alien ship, with the crew rallying to fix the defense screen. Remember that they salvaged off the Zelbinian from last season? It's still around. Zan has gone over to the Halusian ship, which is badly damaged, to try to stop them from firing on them. She is confronted by a bird-like creature called Tak, who is feigning being hurt and says his ship was attacked by Talon. Zan says that she can help them and that Moya has no weapons. Hearing this, Tak strikes her down and orders his second Yaz to fire. Dargo and Shiana manage to get the defense screen up just in time, but the effect of the attack on it causes a problem for the rest of the crew. When they awaken, Crichton is in Aaron's body. Aaron's in Rigel's body, and Rigel's in Crichton's body. They find also that in the three of the crew in Pilot's den have also switched bodies. Dargo is in Pilot, Pilot's in Shiana, and Shiana's in Dargo. Dargo's having trouble sorting out the sounds he can hear from Moya, being Pilot, so Pilot tries to explain to him what to do. Meanwhile, Rigel thinks it's all a dream, but when Crichton whacks him on the head, he finds himself still in Crichton's body. He attacks Aaron, desperate to get his old body back. Back on the alien ship, Tak says that Zan has lied. They do have a defense shield. He shows her a picture, a recording of Talon firing, and says that 30 of his crew are dead. It will take 3 Arns to recharge their weapon, and Zan tells him that they're wrong about Moya, but they remain unconvinced. Back on Moya, Pilot tells Dargo how to distinguish between the sounds that he can hear, and with everyone in Pilot's den, Crichton gives them all picture tags to hang around their necks so they know who's who. Pilot explains what he last remembers. Zan docked on the Halusian vessel, and the defense screen was damaged by the shot, and it needs repair. Pilot thinks that if they align the defense screen to 62% power, like it was during the first shot, they may switch back. So Crichton and Aaron get to work on that. Meanwhile, Tak agrees to go over to Moya to see that she has no weapons, but Zan must stay behind as insurance. Back on Moya, Pilot is getting queasy when Zan gets in touch to explain the situation. Pilot begins foaming at the mouth, apparently rejecting Chiana's body. Meanwhile, the Halusian shuttle arrives, and Rigel, Aaron, Shiana, and Crichton go to meet Tak. As he arrives, Rigel suddenly needs to go to the bathroom and has to go in the middle of the maintenance bay after some how-to pointers from Crichton. Pilot tells Dargo that if he stays calm, he's fine, but he feels like all his senses are gone. Darko says that everything Pilot goes through makes his own life feel insignificant, but Pilot says that he does not experience love and friendship. Oh, poor Pilot.
Aww.
That's not right. Meanwhile, Zan is praying when Yaz says that she believes Moy is harmless. She shows Zan the video of Krayce saying that he travels in peace. However, the Helosians fired unprovoked on Talon. The attack was merely Talon and Krayce defending themselves. Zan is relieved that Krayce does not appear to be mistreating or using Talon for battle. Yaz then explains that Tak fired on Talon as every kill he makes gets him closer to evolving, which I guess means moving higher up in rank. Not really like evolving, because that would be kind of silly.
Or interesting.
Meanwhile, if they'd show that. That could be different. Yeah. Meanwhile, Crichton has fixed the defense screen when he notices his, or rather Eren's, breasts. As Chien and Eren walk in, he gives them a little wiggle and a feel, and on noticing the others in the doorway, his only excuse is, "Hey, I'm a guy." Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Rigel is showing Tak around Moya. Tak apparently feels nauseous and gets sick and throws up on Moya's neural cluster.
That won't come back to haunt him.
Yeah. And Rigel asks Tak to be changed back. As they leave, the vomit starts to attack Moya's circuitry. Huh, attack vomit. Tak returns to his ship, where he asks Zan what they meant by switching back, but she has no idea what he's talking about. Tak says that he'll destroy Moya, so Zan tries to convince Yaz to remove him from command so she can evolve quicker, since he failed to destroy Moya the first time. Chiana, in Dargo's body, corners Rigel, again who's in Crichton's body, and says she wants to get off the ship. In an amusing scene, she tries to convince him by offering to perform sexual acts, but Rigel refuses, saying he wants to regain his throne, and only a Dominar or Hynerian can do that. Crichton and Eren come along, and Rigel mentions the vomit, so they figure that must be what's causing trouble on Moya. They go into the conduits and find the vomit destroying them. Crichton comes up with a cunning plan. Oh, he doesn't really know what he's doing since he's making it all up as he goes.
True to form.
Exactly. That's the best plan. Wing it. They shut down the defense screen and neutralize the acid. The Helosians fire just as they put the defense screen back up, and unfortunately they switch again. Crichton this time goes to Rigel's body. Eren goes to Crichton. Rigel to Eren. And in Pilot's den, Pilot is now in Dargo. Dargo is now in Chiana. And Chiana is in Pilot. So much for those little printouts on their chests. Now that's all wrong.
To find the new dot writing droid.
I know, you got another printout. Wasting paper. But Dargo and Chiana can't wake an unconscious Pilot and think he may be dying. Tak says that he'll ram Moya since his weapons don't work, but Zan manages to convince Yaz to take over. Back on Moya, Crichton finally comes up with another plan. Get the power of the defense screen back up to 62% again, and let them fire again to switch bodies. So far it's not worked out so well, but hey, you know, third time's a charm, right?
He's read the script. It's okay.
That's right. The Helosians remain on a ramming course, and Moya is attempting to starburst. Zan escapes from her handcuff, knocks out Yaz, and manages to steer the ship around Moya. Zan contacts Moya and says she has control. Crichton, in Rigel's body again, asks her to fire again, but she thinks he's mad and asks to speak to Crichton, but Eren's in his body. Rigel says that they think he's paranoid when they say no one ever listens to him, but it's the truth. And yeah, that's pretty much true. Zan shoots again, and this time everybody's in the correct places, and they switch back to their own bodies.
Yay.
Everybody's happy to be back in their own bodies. Well, yeah, I would be too. And Pilot asks Zan about Talon. The two take solace in the fact that he is not being used as a weapon by Krayce. Pilot then goes to talk to Moya, who he says wants to know all his experiences while he was away from her. Zan tells Rigel that the damage to her hand will heal slowly, and it may never fully recover, except for next episode looks totally fine. But that was filmed out of order. That was filmed out of order, so that's their excuse. So Dargo asks Chiana what she did with his Tenkus, since they feel different. He says that he enjoyed being inside her body, but quickly corrects himself, saying he likes her body, unless it's any better, and they hastily leave together. Eren mentions what Crichton did in her body, and he says it was interesting to be in each other's shoes, to which she replies, "You were in my shoes, I was in your pants." The end. Some trivia. So the cast rehearsed this episode by videotaping each other and recreating the relevant mannerisms. In the beginning of the show, ADR engineer Angus Robertson spent hours with each actor to ensure that their performances matched up. Ian Watson, the director, did not feel that the Helosians were a deliberate tribute to the Skeksis from Dark Crystal, but Dave Elsey, the head puppeteer or head designer, admitted that they were like, originally in the script, the Helosians were described as bird-like, and the first thing that jumped into my head were the Skeksis from Dark Crystal. One of my best friends in the world is a guy called Lyle Conway, who designed the Skeksis, and also the plant from Little Shop of Horrors. And at the very beginning of when the Creature Shop was formed, he basically had my job in London. I still think that these were some of the best things the Creature Shop ever has done. They are a cheeky nod to those characters, and I never thought for an instant I'd get away with it. The original plan was to have everyone overdub the voices with the actor that normally played the character, but the director changed that because he felt the swapping would be more effective with the actors themselves, and less annoying, as we'll explain later. During the scenes immediately after the first transformation, dual-track audio is used on the dialogue, with the lines being spoken by both actors. This effect disappears after Crichton assigns everyone photos of their real selves. All right, so what did you think of Out of Their Minds?
Well, you know, as we kind of already said at the top, this was a really kind of well-done episode. It was enjoyable. I don't think I checked the clock. I think we've hit our groove, you know, back, like we said, they've got past the rushed episode timing that they had on the first couple that we had issues with. And yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and I kind of left off one little bit of trivia because it's kind of interesting. This kind of story was always in their plan for the show, but they wanted to do it back in season one, which I don't think would have worked all that well, right? Because you kind of have to have a good number of episodes under your belt to kind of pull off something like this, where, you know, each actor is acting like the other acting like the other characters. So you kind of have to have a lot of time, or at least a lot of episodes done for those characters to develop over time, and for the actors to work together long enough to get that kind of idea of how, you know, the other actor would act like them, and vice versa, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that it also lets the audience get to know the characters and the actors, right? So we have a familiarity with how the actors portray their characters. And it makes it even kind of more interesting when you see the actors take on the mannerisms of the other characters, because you're so used to seeing that from the other actors, and they're doing a great job of impersonating each other.
Yeah, because if you do it too early, they haven't really had time to get that bond, and then even the audience is like, okay, well, who's the difference between Aaron and Crichton? Who cares? Like 30 episodes later, yeah, now it makes more sense. You know, now you can have more of a laugh and more of a, you know, oh look, you know, Dargo's acting like Chiana. He's like weaving back and forth, or oh, Crichton's talking like Rigel because Rigel's in his body, you know, that kind of thing.
Which I bet they had a ton of fun doing.
Yeah, I wonder how many outtakes that might have had if they didn't, you know, or they're just goofing off with each other, you know, like, I don't talk like that, whatever, you know.
Oh, wait, I'm going to YouTube right now to look for that.
Yeah, we'll have to go check that out. And like I mentioned at the last of the trivia, I'm kind of glad that they did not do the opening, like, overlapping voice trick when each character got first swapped. When, you know, like, if Crichton was talking, you heard, you know, Ben Browder's voice and Claudia Black's voice, like, over, like, kind of like a half a second apart or whatever. And that was, like, really annoying. So, you know, it was cool in the beginning to show, okay, that's what's happening, that's what's going on. But for 45 minutes of that, it would have been really hard to understand, even with, like, subtitles on, right?
Right. And, you know, I noticed it when they did it. Obviously, I mean, it was an effect that I kind of caught. But they moved past it so quickly that I didn't hang up on it. And it really wasn't until we hit the trivia that I realized that it didn't even cross my mind that they could use that for the whole episode. Yeah, that would have been much more torturous.
And plus, now we have the running gag or whatever that the, you know, DRDs are also self-propelled printers. So, you know, hey, that's kind of cool.
Dot writing droids.
There you go.
Yeah, that's old already. Sorry.
All right. Yeah. Hey, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're capable of anything, you know.
Yeah, and it made it easier for the audience, yeah, to see the fact that, oh, this is Dargo, but he's got a picture of Chiana. Okay, so it's Chiana, versus trying to weed through the audio and, you know, try to piece that together in your head. So it worked out.
Yeah, agreed. Although I think that, especially like we've kind of beat up a good bit this far into the season, we're familiar with the mannerisms of the characters, and the actors do such a good job of impersonating those mannerisms that I didn't need those. Now, somebody who this was their first episode, sure, you know, those may have helped, but I honestly didn't even need that. I could tell which one they were supposed to be just from the start.
All right, so let's address kind of the running gag that they had in the show. So obviously, you're in a new body, and everybody kind of reacts differently. You know, you have like a Hynerian in a human body, doesn't have a clue what's going on, and, you know, has no idea how to go to the bathroom. So, you know, John's got to tell him step by step how to go to the bathroom. Okay, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, he should have gave him a few more cautionary instructions, but sure.
Yeah. Then we have something that's cringely, awkwardly funny, like, you know, John's in Aaron's body, and then, like, fortunately not towards the camera, because this is a, you know, PG show, takes off her shirt and kind of bounces around, like, okay, it's kind of awkwardly silly. And then Aaron kind of missed the same thing that when she was in John's body, that I guess she checked out the equipment, so to speak. Okay, I get it. I'm sure if we somehow we were to switch bodies with another person or something, we would at some point maybe want to just see what things are like. But it was, some of it was not exactly ha ha funny funny. It was kind of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, a lot of times in these episodes, these type of episodes, it's kind of hard to skip those beats. They like to get them in there, and at least I don't feel like they focused on them too long. They kind of dispersed them any more than we had, and it would have been too much for me. And again, to hear you talk about it, obviously it's not the best parts of the episode. I will say that I give more credit to the to Erin's part where, at least she told and didn't show. Because I think that's one of the few cases where telling, not showing is a better way to go.
Yeah, there's some things we don't need to see on camera or a high shot with hands going like that. Okay, don't need to know that. Okay, just mention it and we can move on. That's cool.
Or maybe, hint and cut, well, I guess would be the better thing here. Not, we got a good amount of time spent on it, and I guess that's what you get.
Yeah, I mean, it was more fun watching them, interact with each other normally as in different bodies and how they had the same mannerisms at of their minds versus their bodies. So that was the more important part of the plot. But yeah, I mean, you gotta throw in the sophomoric humor there. That's Farscape. So that's what you get. Although we do kind of learn a little bit more about Pilot and Moya in a way. Apparently, Pilot's species or just I guess probably the species must be kind of good at multitasking because you got all this input from Moya somehow. However they're joined together, and he's only like still halfway joined now, as we learned from a couple episodes ago. He's not fully joined, so he's got all the input or half the input from Moya, plus his own stuff he's going on with. And both Dargo and Chiana had a kind of a really hard time when they're in Pilot's body trying to handle all that stimulus. And it's kind of cool how the Pilot's trying to explain like there's like sounds and colors and like focus on like that color and that sound to do like life support.
Yeah, I mean, anything we get a little more of in the details of how Pilot interacts is always kind of cool. And I think, we talked about different things about how they were some different interactions and stuff. But I think, in my opinion, if I had to find a criticism with this episode, which, as we said, we really enjoyed, it's that Pilot kind of got sidelined once they hit this part, right? He had a reaction to the body swapping that I don't know that we got a great explanation on, and he's just kind of out of it for the rest of the episode. Pilot doesn't get to do anything where the rest of the characters are trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, because they didn't even bother to try to explain it. Just Pilot couldn't move in another person's body. Okay, well, Pilot doesn't have legs. He has like these little claw things. Okay, that makes sense. He doesn't know how his legs work. Okay, but then like the foaming at the mouth and like passing out and going catatonic. I'm like, okay, no one else has a problem. Is this just drama? Oh, he could die in someone's body and just ooh, they gotta fix the problem soon. We didn't really need that because we already had the drama of the other ship like trying to destroy them. So that didn't kind of make any sense.
Yeah, and they didn't really give a time like, oh, he's fading or anything, other than the drama of him having to wake up just in time to stand up in the right spot. That was really the only drama we got out of that. And I didn't think we needed it. Like you said, we already had the ship and everything else to worry about.
Yeah, it's kind of like the extra drama that we don't really need because we have more drama going on. So I guess kind of speaking of being sidelined, kind of, it's kind of too bad that Zan wasn't on the ship to see how she reacted to being in a flesh and blood body or others being in like a plant body. That kind of could have been cool. But then I guess then it would have been like seven people, and that's kind of like an odd number of switching, and that might make the final get people back in their own bodies a little harder. So I kind of see that why they did that. Plus, also, they'd have somebody on the other ship to handle that kind of drama over there.
Yeah, it gives us our focus for being on the other ship. And, that actually does surprise me, considering that, we kind of sidelined Pilot, and then to have Zan, not necessarily sidelined, she got a lot to do, but at the same time, she got left out of the body switching. And we have been getting a lot of good information on her plant side from some of the recent episodes. So it would have been interesting to see the other characters react to her physiology. That'd probably been better than the other physiology jokes.
It's been like decades since I saw the Dark Crystal, but when I before I read the trivia bit, when I did see the creatures, I'm like, hey, those kind of look like those things from the Dark Crystal. I forgot their name because I saw it like once, like I said, like 20 years ago or whatever. But so I'm kind of glad I wasn't alone in spotting that.
So I guess I'm gonna lose a little nerd cred here, but I've never actually seen The Dark Crystal. I'm familiar with it, but never actually watched it. So I guess at some point I should revisit that.
Yeah, I haven't caught like the not reboot, but the sequel, whatever. They did something a couple of years ago, I think. I don't know if it's like
that was on Netflix, I think.
Something, yeah. I'll have to go back and look at that, but I never got around to that one. But yeah, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, the creature shop doing what they do, you know, making believable aliens. I mean, yeah, they kind of looked a little stiff and puppety, but that's kind of what they were. And it's the year 2000, and you know, on a TV budget, that's what you're going to get. But for what they did, they looked amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if we haven't established it by now, this is Muppets in Space. So
exactly. So you know, you have to have a Muppet. You know, you got two Muppets on the ship, now you got two Muppets on the other ship. Hey, you know, Muppets all the way down.
We just need some pigs.
Yeah, pigs in space. That's the play. That's the play in the title. That's, you know, that's why we did it.
Yeah, it's there. It only took me however many episodes to hit it directly on the nose, but go ahead.
Sometimes comedy is subtle. You just have to. Yeah.
Which is actually, I'm going to use that as a segue to say that, you know, I guess if I did have a real disappointment in this episode, I nitpicked earlier, but if I actually had a disappointment in this episode, it's that they didn't name drop the title in the episode.
Yeah, I mean, this one would have been easy to drop out of your mind, out of their minds or something, you know, like when Rigel was in Crichton's body and talking to Zan, and Zan's like, you're not making any sense. You know, no one explained it to her over the comm. That would be a perfect time to say, like, that's because, you know, they're out of their minds or whatever. You know, but,
yeah. Y'all must be out of your minds. Yeah, something fun like that. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, you can't always drop the title in the episode.
But you should try.
That's right. It makes it more fun for us watching it 20 years later. Especially when they don't list the title, like, on the screen, like, you know, like Star Trek lists the title of the episode in the opening scene. They don't list the titles of these episodes anywhere. So, but it's fun after the fact.
Yes.
So, hey, the defense screen's back. They got it way early, like what, episode 6 or something of season 1, and I don't think we saw it at all, hardly, for the first season, and now 10 or 9 episodes into season 2, it's like the second or third time we've seen it. So, I guess now it's a thing, and they use it. It's just part of the ship now, and oh, remember that thing we got? Let's just use it now, because we have it.
Yeah, it's going to evidently be this season's recurring salvation. It seems to be come up a pretty big part in each episode, assuming it still works after the last couple.
Yeah, because I mean, it's, you know, I guess that's also the running gag with the shield. Is like it works for a little bit and then it doesn't, and then it blows up and they have to like fix it and it blows up again. So.
Yeah, although creeping vomit's kind of hard to recover from. So
yeah, that was interesting. That was a neat. Again, I don't know what that was. I mean, you can, you know, nowadays you can speculate like something like, you know, nano thing or why this creature throws up sentient or programmable vomit. I don't know, but okay, interesting, cool, different idea.
Yeah, pretty well executed in the prop department too.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good way they did it. It looked kind of like, I don't know, like jello or gelatin or something, you know, oozing around. So it's probably a fun time on the effect stage to make that move around.
It was, yeah, definitely a shocking day.
Yeah, right. Literally. And I guess we also learn that Kreis and Talon are still around. You know, we didn't just, you know, forget about them. And at least this time, Kreis hasn't gone off the deep end completely. He's not like, you know, twirling his mustache and being evil and shooting all the ships he comes across. He's at least trying to be nice, or at least, well, nicer. And I guess they mentioned that Talon's getting bigger and stronger because pretty much he almost destroys that ship, which is much bigger than he was.
They did a good job, I think, with showing that we're at first kind of introduced to the concept that, you know, Kreis showed up and Talon just, you know, fired on them indiscriminately. And that's totally believable, right? Because Kreis is a bad guy. We spent an entire season with him being the bad guy. And then, you know, it's kind of a neat twist at the end that we find out, you know, actually he didn't. It was provoked. And kind of leaves you wondering, well, then what is their goal? What are they doing? So it was a nice reminder that they're out there.
Yeah, and that, remember, he's still there. So, you know, we'll still see him later in the future because, you know, that plot thread is still out there and it's progressing as plot threads do. So, but that's when you have a nice writer's room, we can like weave that stuff in every week, you know, so you don't have to have one-off non-connected episodes, which this wasn't connected to anything, at least not that we know of so far, but they can at least drop in previous stuff to make you like, hey, remember, this is still here.
Yeah, I mean, these episodes might not have been sequential to anything directly, but they're definitely callbacks and references to things that we've seen or tech they've picked up, all the different kind of things to keep it in a linear. We feel like we're progressing. It's not just Creature of the Week, although it is Creature of the Week.
Yeah, and as we've seen and commented about tons of times before, you know, this is like building the characters. And then they'll reference something like this later. We still talk about Aaron being like half pilot DNA from like, you know, almost a whole year later, you know, episode-wise, not podcast-wise. But so, you know, as long as they keep getting good stuff, then they'll keep referencing it. And so you remember that thing we did back ago? Poof, here it is again.
And that was even from one of our least favorite episodes. So, you know, credit there.
If it's terrible, they can still get something nice out of it. All right, anything?
Speaking of something nice out of it, you want to roll on to the next episode?
Yeah, let's discuss not quite cloning or bad cloning.
Cloning gone wrong. All right, season 2, episode 10, My Three Crichtons. Aaron is in the maintenance bay pulling some Moya components out of Crichton's module to use in her prowler. Crichton objects when a ball of energy suddenly penetrates Moya's hull and examines everyone in turn. When it reaches Crichton, it hovers above his head, so Aaron shoots it. But it then expands, enveloping Crichton.
Oopsie.
Dargo Not the smartest move there. Dargo comes along to see what's happening, and the ball starts to vibrate, throwing Crichton back out, shortly followed by some beast, which lands on Crichton and then runs off. Crichton can't remember what happened when he was inside the ball, while Zan finds some blood from the beast on the floor. Rigel tells Dargo to sniff out the creature, but Dargo can only smell Crichton. Chiana's trying to get Crichton to explain what happened, but he asks her to get him some more clothes. Zan says that since Crichton was not cut, the blood must have come from the creature, but it's definitely Crichton's blood. Chiana goes to Crichton's quarters, but the beast is in there and corners her. However, the beast then says, Chiana, and stumbles over some of the words. She tries to run, but he pins her down and convinces her that he is also Crichton. Chiana takes this Crichton to Zan, but the real Crichton is less than convinced and asks it what it wants. It jumps on Crichton, and Zan knocks it unconscious with a sedative. Zan later tells Crichton that her blood analysis proves that it is his blood, and he wonders why anyone would clone him. The ball starts fluctuating again, and out pops another Crichton. This time, apparently, a more evolved future version with a super brain. The crew lock Future John in a cell, and the real Crichton quizzes him. Future John explains that he is like an alternate version of Crichton, with all of his memories intact, so the real Crichton questions him to test his memories. The ball starts fluctuating again, and now it's creating an interdimensional portal that's trying to pull Moya through. Future John tells Aaron to use the defense screen to counter the pull, but the real Crichton has already thought of it. Future John tells Aaron that they have to do this right, so she agrees to take him to help, but only at gunpoint. Crichton is sorting out the defense screen. Hey, remember the defense screen?
Yeah, when it's Future still there. John,
it's still there. When Future John says they have to calibrate it to the ball, so they must reduce the setting to 85%. After quickly mulling it over, Crichton goes with it, and the screen is successful in reflecting back the ball's pull, but Pilot says it will probably only last about 4 arns. Beast John wakes up with Chiana by his side and again gets angry, although she manages to calm him down. Future John comes along with Aaron, but says that they won't learn anything. He mentions that Crichton is the template, the original, and they are the copies, and then asks Pilot if the ball has communicated yet. But the real Crichton is already looking at the signals. Future John joins him and reanalyzes the communications. The ball starts communicating, but now only the Crichtons can hear it. It is a vessel, and it needs one of the samples, quote, to go back. If it doesn't get one, it will absorb all biomatter within a certain distance of its radius. Dargo asks what's going on, and Crichton says that one of them is going to die.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun. Beast John tells Chiana that it will be him who dies, but Chiana suggests that the guy with the big head should. Future John thinks that the ball is a remarkable device, and the real Crichton realizes that it must have chosen him because it's never had the chance to get data on a human. Future John says that the answer is to return the most expendable one of them, which is Beast John, according to him at least. But the real Crichton says no. Rigel agrees with Future John, but Crichton says that they may be wrong and they can't just chuck him through like he's nothing. Future John says that they'll see what they can do, but when the time comes, Chiana tells the Beast that she knows Crichton and they'll get through it. He says that he does know Crichton. He'll save Moya, save Pip, and there's only one answer. Pilot says that he doesn't think that Future John will be successful in analyzing the samples. Pilate says that he and Moya would never expect an innocent being to die, and he will understand if Crichton leaves. Crichton says he won't, and Pilate says that if they have the solution, but Crichton will not stop until he has to. The defense screen is failing, so Crichton is called to command. Future John is talking with Zan, but he says he won't find a solution. It's over. Zan can't believe he's giving up, but he says he's facing reality. Zan says he's no longer the Crichton she knew. The real Crichton is trying to patch up the screen, but Dargo tells him to start facing reality, but he responds that he needs more time. The wires explode, and the defense screen is almost down. Poor defense screen. Future John tells him it's time and offers to take care of it. Crichton asks how he can be so calm, but he says he's prepared to do what has to be done and tells Crichton not to feel bad. Dargo goes with Crichton, but Chiana has hidden Beast John away. She set him free. Chiana chews Crichton out, saying that he thinks Beast John is nothing, but he's him. The ball fluctuates again, and Future John tells Aaron that they must reassess and says it would make sense to get rid of Crichton. But she disagrees, so he knocks her out. Crichton finds Beast John, but lets him go and joins Future John in the maintenance bay. Future John says that he thought he would let Beast John go, but Crichton says they couldn't save themselves at someone else's expense. Future John says that he sees him as Crichton sees Beast John and fires at him. Crichton dodges, and Future John says that if Crichton wasn't here, he would not volunteer to go. Crichton pulls his gun on Future John, but throws it down. He couldn't do it. Future John knocks him down, saying that with Crichton here, he would always be an outsider. And Crichton says that if he's the future, then he's glad he won't be there to see it. Beast John suddenly leaps in and kills Future John with a pipe. Saying that this is not his place, Beast John accepts his fate. When Crichton says that he understands, Beast John carries Future John through the ball. Dargo comforts Crichton, saying that Future John is only one possible genetic path. Chiana says that she heard what he did, but he says it took a while and then he needed help. Chiana says she's glad it worked out, and he says he wishes he could be, but the least developed one did the right thing, and somehow she knew he would. She says she knew because she knows him, and then she leaves him alone. A little bit of trivia about this episode. This is the first episode of the series not to contain any guest stars. In the script, the three versions were called Futuro, Neandro, and Crichton.
Aw, you should get a nice nickname for current Crichton, or like, you know, Crichton Prime. So, I don't know, something, but whatever.
It has to be a Dro. Crytro? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll workshop that.
Yeah.
Neandro's outfit was created by Jim Henson's Creature Shop as a fursuit with a muscle suit underneath. Also, this episode, while broadcast before Look at the Princess trilogy, which we'll start watching in the next couple of podcasts, was actually filmed after.
Foreshadowing. Da-da.
Yeah, spoiler warning there. I didn't know that was the title. Browder adopted separate accents to further differentiate the characters. He said the actual reason for differentiating an accent was because there was a lot of stuff over the comms. I looked at the script and thought that if I sounded the same over the comms talking to myself, it would be confusing as to who's talking. And finally, Aaron's reference to Future John's lack of equipment harkens back to her earlier comment in Out of Their Mind about having been in John's pants. That and the events in A Human Reaction. So what'd you think, Garrett?
Yeah, so as we kind of, I guess, hinted at earlier, that, yeah, this was pretty good. We both liked it. I guess the only nitpick I could make is it some parts kind of dragged a little bit, not a lot. It's kind of like they could have maybe written a little tighter, or had maybe a couple more maybe another subplot or two, or less of a bottle show, like if they had like a guest star or something, so they can kind of be confused or have, you know, some kind of more interaction. But other than that, you know, it was a pretty good episode. It had some nice acting, and obviously, you know, Crichton trying to act like three different people, which I guess it's probably a long day for him to have to do like three different kinds of makeups and suits and prosthetics and stuff. So, you know, props to Ben Browder for putting up with all that.
Yeah, I bet that brain thing took a while to put on. So I can see that. I will say that there are a few times I would say losing the thread, but I kind of was ready for them to move on to the next scene. But about the time I started feeling that way, they'd pick it up and they'd have me back again. So I don't think I quite felt it drug as much as maybe you did, but I definitely saw some of the spots where they probably could have tightened it.
Yeah, it's kind of like they had a good idea, but they couldn't quite fill like 40 or 45 minutes with it. It's got maybe like 40 minutes, and they kind of had to make up 5 minutes somewhere.
Although I think it would be tough. You kind of mentioned having another guest or something, because this was one of the few that didn't have a guest star. But I don't know. I mean, with two extra Crichtons running around, it seems kind of hard to shoehorn another extra character.
Yeah, or kind of have them explain, you know, what's going on or whatever. You know, at least keep it to the crew. You know, it's a bottle show. I'd say you're trying to save money, but then you got basically three Crichtons and three makeups. And I mean, I guess obviously you shoot them all in contiguous, you know, do the beast stuff. Okay, you know, get out of that costume, forget that, we're done with that, throw that away, you know, and do the rest. So, but yeah, I can imagine that probably increased the production time on this thing a little bit.
Probably made for some fun acting where he's having to act against himself who's actually not really there, right?
Yeah, like you get the stand-in or like, you know, the green screen with like the X. It's like, you know, that's you over there. Okay, you know, whatever. I kind of mentioned in the previous episode that when you watch these, you know, they don't show you the title on like the intro of the episode, like how Star Trek does, or other like I think Stargate or somebody, you know, shows you the title in the opening scene. So, you know, for us who already know that and knew the title, we know that there's probably three Crichtons because of the title, My Three Crichtons. But, you know, otherwise you kind of wouldn't know that. So they do kind of have a little brief mystery of what's that creature that came out? What is it? But then they kind of like, you know, we don't have time for that. So Zan just comes up right out and says, oh, the beast's blood's really Crichton's. So, okay, great. Then when they're tracking the beast, Darvis says all he can smell is Crichton. So you kind of get the hint pretty soon that they're both Crichton. They don't kind of string it out too long.
No, I mean, when the beast Crichton first emerges, we don't really get a good look at him. I mean, again, I knew what I was looking for, but I could see, especially watching it on 2000 size TV, that, you know, that could slide right by. But they pretty quickly, like you say, bring the audience into the loop, and even the crew kind of figures it out really quickly. So we don't spend a whole lot of time working on the who's who aspects of it, and spend a lot more time on the problem, which is kind of a neat way to, probably why I didn't feel it drug so much, because we got past that part and immediately went to solving the personality issues.
Yeah, and it's kind of cute or good that, you know, John's still in denial of the whole thing up until future John shows up. It's like, well, okay, now he looks definitely just like you, except for like the weird head brain thing. But otherwise, look, it's you. Okay, fine. Then this other thing is me too. Great. So, you know, but that's good. That's what you would do. You wouldn't think that, oh, I've been like cloned. It's just something that the thing let out. It's not me. It can't be me. You know, that's impossible.
Well, and even then he denied it up until future John not only remembered something or could tell him something about the past, but could tell him something about the past that he'd forgotten until he was reminded about it. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, I mean, you can only deny it so long before, you know, the reality hits you right in the face.
And that was our first instance of knowing that future John actually remembered more and had better cognitive ability than Crichton Prime.
Yeah, because you would think, being basically a weird, not pulsing head like the Talosians on Star Trek, you know, where they had the big brains, but you could at least pretty much, I guess, above his forehead was pretty much like pretty much a brain with no hair, kind of that kind of look. So it's like, you would hope that if his brain's on the outside, he knows more or has more brain capacity.
Yeah, it seems kind of dangerous to have that much exposed brain, but yeah.
Yeah, that might hurt if you bang your head on, anyway.
I was having Krang flashbacks, but whatever. Yeah.
I guess keeping with the other TV show kind of thing going on, I guess you kind of have that like Beauty and the Beast thing going on with Chiana and Beast Crichton, because, you know, they're pretty much like together like the entire show, more or less. So that's kind of neat. And also, no one really seems to want to stand up for Beast Crichton for most of the episode. Current Crichton, our Crichton, comes around at the end, but pretty much for the most of the show, it's kind of like everyone looks down on, you know, poor Beast Crichton.
And it's cool that she points out that the attributes that Beast Crichton has that she likes are things that she likes in the real John, right? I mean, it's his kindness and his personality that she brings up and mentions to him at the end that is how she knows him. And that was the part of Beast Crichton that she found appealing and had issues with in future Crichton.
Yeah, because I hate comparing it to Star Trek, but that's the only other episode I can think of off the top of my head where they split somebody into one more person. So you had like the good Kirk and bad Kirk. So you had like, you know, all the goodness and, you know, calm, logic, passion, you know, compassion in good Kirk, and like the drive, ambition, aggression in evil Kirk. So here, you know, obviously you have Beast Crichton, who's like a devolved human. So you get like the more animalistic side of things, like, you know, emotional, quick to anger, strong, maybe not as smart. And on the opposite side of things, you have future evolved Crichton, who's like not quite all logic, but probably more logic than feelings. Kind of cold, calculating, arrogant, mostly because I think he's like, you know, I'm the smartest guy in the room here. Y'all don't understand this. I'm going to get my way by manipulating you. So, and then you have Crichton in the middle, who's, you know, obviously the amalgam of both those things.
It would have been interesting, I think, to have future Crichton leave behind some sort of solved puzzle, you know, maybe provide a key to some of the wormhole stuff or stuff. Not that obviously we want that solved yet, but, you know, something to show that he has the great expanded intellect that he keeps talking about, that things are becoming more clear to him and all that, but probably wouldn't have lined up with his selfish nature. I will say that one of my favorite things between the Crichtons, especially between future Crichton and Crichton Prime, whatever we're going to call him today, is the accent that, and we mentioned this in the trivia, I think, that Ben Browder picked up to differentiate between the Crichtons. And, you know, obviously, as given the accent that I have, I always think it's interesting that they chose the more southern-sounding accent to differentiate the intelligent character, since that's usually not the way that media portrays the southern accent.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess the feature's all southern, right?
If it knows what's good for it.
That's right. Yeah, because I kind of like, wow, he's really laying on the, like, you know, like southern, like Alabama, Georgia kind of accent there, whatever he's doing, you know, and like, wow, okay. But hey, it's kind of cool. Like he said, you know, it's easier to differentiate, you know, oh, okay, that's this Crichton talking, not the other one. And obviously Beast Crichton had a mouth full of prosthetic teeth. So that's hard. I'm like, he's like, what? You know, it's kind of hard to understand him, but hey, that's another way to differentiate it.
Although they did a serious job on future Crichton's teeth as well, so I don't know.
I did notice that he had like those like perfect shiny glow in the dark white perfectly straight teeth. So I'm like, I guess that's a feature too. You know, we get your teeth are perfect. I don't know.
Yeah, almost to the point where they weren't separate teeth. It was kind of creepy.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. Maybe we evolve into like herbivores and we don't need those spiky incisors and stuff. I don't know. Whatever. But hey, at least it's cool that they're thinking about it and they're projecting what would a future human look like. So yeah, it's cool. They get to play around stuff. And I guess speaking of a future boy here, I mean, basically he's willing to sell out his other two versions to stay alive because, you know, obviously he's the smartest one. So, you know, obviously he's the one that's got to stay behind. You know, the rest of them can just go in the sphere and get dissected and whatever, but he's going to save himself. You know, he's going to save number one. Whereas Beast Crichton is kind of the opposite. You know, he pretty much knows that it's going to be him because I guess he knows he's like, or he thinks he's the least important of the three. But it turns out that, you know, in the end, he saves the day. And you know, he's the one that's kind of the more compassionate, the more, I guess, the more human or the more evolved, haha, quote unquote, than at least future Crichton anyway.
Right. And I think it shows that the important thing there, and obviously, you know, this is exactly what they were going for, was showing the importance of the compassion side over the logic side, right? That he's willing to sacrifice himself for the crew because that's his family. And, you know, future Crichton even outright says that he would sacrifice them before he sacrificed himself and just take the chance that they would survive going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, pretty much like you said, like, you know, Beast Crichton, that's also that side of our evolution or whatever, like the protector, the nurturer, so, you know, he has no problems, you know, killing future Crichton to save current Crichton. But then knowing that now they both can go into the sphere and, you know, leave the current Crichton. So, you know, that further, again, proves that he's the better of the, well, at least of the two Crichtons anyway.
Yeah, I will admit, though, I didn't see the death by the pipe in the study coming. So that surprised Beast, me a little bit.
Beast Crichton in the maintenance bay with the lead pipe. Yeah, that's... Yep. Yeah, I just thought, like, oh, maybe he's knocked him out because then they're going to do something or he'll pick him up and they'll go through together or something. Well, they went through together and he picked him up, just he was dead. Like, okay. I mean, I guess the thing doesn't care. It's going to dissect and analyze him anyway. And it's got one that's alive, one that's dead. So, okay, bonus, whatever. So.
I'll say that may have worked out better for Beast Crichton because now that they don't have to, you know, if they need tissue samples, they've got the dead one to pull it from. So, yeah.
Yeah, hey, maybe he's smarter than he looks. Yeah, who knows? Any other comment before we wrap up the show?
No. Yeah, again, we liked both of these episodes. So, yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, overall, yeah, like we said, we like them. They were both pretty good. So they're really hitting their stride again. We've had, like, what, 4 or 5 good episodes now in a row? So that's a good sign with half a season to go. So hopefully they keep that going. Yeah, I mean, my three Crichtons kind of dragged a little bit, like I said before. But the interesting kind of philosophical kind of thing made up for it. Out of Their Minds, we said, was great. You know, it was the right place to put it. They had long enough to grow into their characters, long enough to watch each other act, and long enough for the audience to understand them acting different. So that was pretty, I guess, the sweet spot for that episode.
Yeah, these were, I think I've said before, they were we really liked them. They were two of my favorite episodes from this season, and probably line up with the best of season one, you know, possibly with the exception of the two-parter season finale, because that was just pretty good. But they're just kind of my style of story. I really like, you know, especially the first one where they were doing the interactions between the character impersonations, right, where each character is taking on the other. That's just my style of storytelling, and I really enjoyed them, even with some of the problematic references.
Yeah, questionable content.
And as I said before, you know, I was disappointed in the lack of title drops in both episodes. But, you know, you take what you get.
Yeah, I mean, you figure, you know, probably current Crichton would have quipped something about My Three Crichtons. Because that would, although it took him a while to figure out that there were three Crichtons. So, okay, maybe we can give him that one.
He had a rough episode, so.
Yeah, you know, he had a bad day there. You know, the defense screen keeps blowing up in front of him. You know, it's just, you know, nothing works. It's not his day.
Yeah, they're going to need a new defense screen at some point.
Yeah, well, we'll see if they ever fix the wonky defense screen. Although that's their stick now, so you can't fix that. It's got to stay, you know, marginal.
It's got to at least be able to get to 85%.
Yeah, they love the percentages on those defense screens. These last two stories, so they're pretty specific on percentages of the power. Yeah.
It never needs to go to 100 though. That's not needed. So
yeah. That's right. It doesn't go to 11. Is what you're saying?
No, but actually, 11 could be referenced. It's pretty low. So.
Well, speaking of 11.
Speaking of 11.
Hey, numbers. All right. And that was a great segue. Next time, season 2, episode 11, Look at the Princess, part 1, A Kiss is But a Kiss. And episode 12, Look at the Princess, part 2, I think. And like we said before in the trivia, this is like actually a trilogy. So this is the first time we're doing a trilogy in Farscape. And our usual guessing game, I mean, not a lot to work with here. So I guess we can pretty much guarantee there's probably going to be a princess that they're looking at, because that's the title. So maybe the first one, obviously you meet the princess. Some romance probably involves. And next time, sounds like there's a proposal and maybe a marriage. Other than that, since I didn't look ahead to see the third episode title because I'm not there yet, that's where I'll leave it at that. And I'm guessing they probably don't keep being married, because I don't think there's another character that suddenly pops up on the show being married to somebody. So somehow it must end at some point.
Yeah, I think that tracks. I don't have enough information to make a title guess. I will say that, just as my grumble, I hope they don't mess with Crichton, right? We've had plenty of Crichton romance episodes, and I think he and Aaron are in a good place, so I really don't want that to happen. So if I had my pick, I think I'd like to see these be Rigel-based.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, Rigel is good with wives. He says he has, like, what, 18 or something of them? So, yeah, maybe. What's another one? Just add it to the...
Yeah, just another Hynerian princess, and we're good to go.
Yeah. And then as I was looking at the title, that does kind of trip, like, a memory, like this three-parter. So this might be where I started watching Farscape back 20 years ago? I'm not sure. So I guess after next week's watch and podcast, I will tell you if, yes, this is what I remember, or if there's some other multi-part thing in the future that I think there's like weddings and courtship and something that I remember, I think, from this next one. We'll see. All right. So that is your homework for next time. Just 2 out of 3. Don't watch all 3. Only watch the first 2. And we'll see you next time. Goodbye. Dargo asks Chiana what she did. Well, damn. Dargo asks Chiana what he... God.
Dargo comforts Crichton, saying that future John was the only possible genetic... was only one of the... of,